Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome in, welcome in. It is Tuesday night, so you know what that means. It is time for Voiceless to Victorious. And this is Dr. Marcy, and we are here tonight with a very serious subject, but one that I feel like is very, very necessary. So as I welcome you, and this is Dr. Marcy with the America's Voice for the Voiceless. And each week when we get together, you can always expect the conversations to always be transparent. And for some, they may be even a bit uncomfortable, which is probably going to be the case with our subject matter tonight. But it's always my wish that what's said here inspires you to grow through your discomfort. And as always, I want to ensure you that this is a safe space to bring your whole authentic self to. My guests each week have successfully fought their demons and continue to battle towards healing, and they have found their voices, and they're actually entering into a state of empowered independence. And so I humbly come before each of you tonight with the intention that something will be said tonight that will empower you to either begin or continue to make sustainable changes in your own life and your relationships, and begin to proceed along your own personal journey to go from voiceless to victorious. I always, every week, I ask God to use us to have the conversation that you need to hear, and I thank Him tremendously for this platform and the opportunity to become a conduit for healing. Just as a reminder, every week, the phone lines are open. They remain open for the duration of the show. And so if you'd like to call in with comments or questions, you can do so. That number is 914-219-0880. And on that note, I am about to introduce and welcome in tonight's guest, a very, very special friend of mine. I've grown to know her and to love her for her humility, her transparency, and she has one of the most giving hearts of anybody I've ever met. And Miss Lisa, I thank you for trusting me to walk with you this evening as you open up the vault and share your story. And I know some of them for the first time publicly. So tonight, my victoriously courageous guest is Miss Lisa Halls, and she is a 3-time best-selling author. She's traveled around the world to spread her message about being a survivor of domestic violence and suicide. She shares daily inspirational messages, bringing hope and light to others in their times of darkness. She's shared the stage on numerous platforms using her voice to remind other people that they're not alone. You're not alone. Lisa has a unique ability to liberate women, especially working with domestic violence survivors, and she helps release them from their old stories and the beliefs by helping them to write new stories and creating new endings. So together, she works to craft a life worth living, one with power, passion, and purpose. So y'all, please welcome in to the building, Miss Lisa Halls. Miss Lisa, hello.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I am fantastic, and I am so, so, so happy for you to be on here tonight, for you to be willing to have this conversation. It's not an easy conversation that we're about to embark on. So you and I have spoken before about your story and how your story is the story of many women, and your secrets are the same and similar secrets to so many people, but they suffer in silence. And so I'm going to give you your roses early. I'm going to applaud you in advance for being open to this process and for your desire to help shine a light down a dark and sometimes deadly tunnel. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you. And I truly, truly believe that someone is going to be changed by your story tonight. So welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for this opportunity to share this space with you and and allow my voice to be heard. So I'm excited to break down some walls and hopefully shed some light, like you said, to others who are struggling in their darkness, and hopefully be able to have the strength to find their voice and know that they aren't alone. So thank you again.
Absolutely. It's definitely my pleasure, my honor. And, you know, I know that this wasn't one of the things when you woke up at the beginning of the year and you said, hey, let me just go public and tell all my whole story. So I thank you. It takes a lot of courage to speak your truth and to tell a truth that even people who maybe know you and maybe know you quite well don't necessarily know about you. And so for that, I thank you. So I am going to stop talking, and I'm going to turn the floor over to you and just ask that you kind of share with us your background. I know you have, you know, we've talked about domestic violence, we talked about suicide, we talked about self-harming, so lots and lots of things. So just kind of take us all the way back and bring the listeners kind of through your story, and so that they can kind of hear what your journey's been.
Absolutely. So I was in a domestic violence marriage for 8 years. And during that time, I had left him 6 times before I finally walked away for good the 7th time. Lots of broken promises, lots of we'll get counseling, things will get better, we'll do what we have to do to make this work. And every time I went back, it was another broken promise. And I stayed in the relationship and the marriage because I didn't want another, this is my second marriage, I didn't want another broken family. I didn't want my kids to go through that again. And if I would have known then what I know now about the damage that not only did it cause myself, but it caused my family and my children, I would have left the first time and never returned. And I, thinking, you know, my mom did it for 12 years. She stuck around with it for 12 years. And if she could do it, you know, then who am I to get out of it? Who am I to walk away from this? And so after I had left my marriage, I didn't really know how to handle it. I didn't, you know, I was homeless on the streets with my children. The night before I left my ex-husband, I had prayed to God and I said, I need help. I need help to get out of this and not return. And the only way that I'm going to be able to do this is through your strength. And he had opened the door to make that happen. My ex-husband was sleeping, and I had called my son the night before and said, we're leaving. We're not coming back, and I need you to pack enough stuff for whatever's going to fit in the car. I don't know where we're going to go. So enough stuff to fit in the car, and we're leaving in the morning. And that was our journey to finding hope, to be able to find an out. As I stated, we were homeless on the streets and sleeping behind church buildings, sleeping in empty parks at night. And I had many sleepless nights because you hear all those stories of things that happen at night in the park. And I had to make sure that my kids were protected. And so they were sleeping, I stayed awake. Hoping that we wouldn't be, you know, the police wouldn't be coming and removing us from the park and you know, parking lot, Walmart parking lots and wherever we could find to sleep and stay warm. It was in the wintertime, so wherever we could, I could keep them as warm as I could until we were able to get into a shelter. We were homeless on the streets for 3 months. I tried saving enough money, putting enough money away, to save up for our exit, and my ex-husband had found my stash of money. So he didn't find all of it, but he did find a good majority of it. So I had to figure out how we were going to survive on what little resources that we had. But we did. We survived, and we were able to get into a shelter. And that really started my journey of being able to get back on my feet, or the survival part of it. But I still was suffering through the mental health, and how was I going to deal with this mentally, and the pain that I was dealing with was so deep inside that I didn't turn to drugs and alcohol for my outlet. I had turned to self-harm, and cutting was my option, or cutting was my resource. And I was cutting to remove that pain that was deep within my soul. And the only way to relieve that was to cut. I have many memories of just sitting in the bathtub and not even knowing the damage that I did until that feeling and that pain was released. I was so unconscious of and not aware of the damage that I had done until it was relieved. And I didn't seek help. Didn't see counseling until one day I was at work, and I had called up a girlfriend of mine and said, "I need you to make sure that my kids are taken care of and protected." And she goes, "What do you mean?" And I said, "I'm not giving you any other information. Just make sure that my kids are taken care of." And I had a plan. My plan was to go home and go into the bathroom and. In my life, I was done. I was done fighting. I was done dealing with it. My kids being in and out of the system, and they had their resources that they had turned to, and being a single mom trying to balance it all and two jobs and everything else, I was tired. I was tired of fighting, and I remember the police coming to. Knock at the door, and I had come out, and they said, "Is everything okay?" And I said, "Yep, everything is fine." And they said, "We had a wellness check phone call, and looking at your arms, everything is not okay." I said, "I'm fine." And they said, "We're going to take you to a place to get some help." And I said, I'm not going." And they said, "Well, you have two choices. Either you can go with us voluntarily to a place for 48 hours, or we're going to take you to the hospital, and that's where you'll be for 2 weeks." And so I chose the 48-hour option and ended up being admitted into Community Bridges, and that was literally the best thing that's ever happened to me. So it's still a fight every single day. To this day, it's still a fight. I haven't self-harmed in 2 years, but I'm still triggered. I still have those urges. I still have the urges of ending my life and just being done. But what keeps me going is my kids. My kids is what keeps me going and what keeps me fighting. So through all of it, I've just learned to reach up and reach out and find that circle of trust. It's been hard. You think that you can trust someone and you break that trust, and you're back to square one, trying to find who it is that you can really trust and reach out to in the darkest of nights. But I'm grateful for who I have in my life and for that circle of people that I'm able to reach out to.
Yeah, that, you and I have talked over a period of time about your story and how compelling it is, because there's a lot of common factors in your story And one of them was when you started out talking about the domestic violence, and you said that you left 6 times before you left for good. And, you know, just that piece alone, I think a lot of times women, we, myself also being a survivor, myself also should have left before it got to the point that it did in my relationship as well. I think that they say the statistic is on average that women leave an average of 7 times. But can you talk about a little bit about how you felt, like explain what for you, because for everybody it's different, I get that, but for you, what was it, do you think, that made you go back before you left for good?
It was really having another broken family, and just being wrapped myself. He stripped my self-worth of me. I no longer had my self-worth. And he had told me multiple times that nobody's going to want me with 4 children and nobody's going to, you know, I'm not going to be able to make it without him. I didn't care if anybody wanted me, you know, being a single mom, that wasn't my concern. I was content being a single mom for the rest of my life, but it was being able to survive out there with 4 children and not, just being able to be able to stay away and
was he abusive to you and the kids?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, was he abusive to you and the kids? Or was all of the abuse centered on you?
He was abusive to me and my children. Very physical, very emotional, verbal, sexual. My husband had raped me when disciplining the children. He was very abusive to them. And I wasn't allowed to have a voice at that time, to the extent of the discipline with them. And I had, so my children, four of my children were raped and molested by my stepson. And I had called the police numerous times. I had called CPS numerous times to get the help and get the resources to leave him. Again, if I would have known then what I had known now, it wouldn't have happened over and over again. And when CPS had come to my house, they had told me, they had called me and said they were coming. And I told them, I said, if you have any questions for me, call me after, because I will not be allowed to answer any questions when you're here. And their response to what my stepson had done to my children was put an alarm on the door. Put an alarm on the door. So anytime he opens the door, the alarm will go off. Let's not remove him from the situation or anything. Because every time I tried to leave, my ex-husband would take the keys from me. He would lock the door. I wasn't allowed to leave. And when I was able to get away, he would find me every single time. And so I had to leave when he was asleep. That was the only way that I could do it, was leaving when he was asleep. And looking in my rearview mirror and hoping that he wasn't going to wake up and come and try to find me. And I just wanted to go to whoever. Go ahead.
You said what?
I just want to give hope to whoever is in that situation and whoever thinks that they can't get out, that, you know, to reach out. There's resources out there that you're able to, and anybody can tell you to leave, and it's easy to leave. You know, I have family members and friends that told me all the time, just leave them, just leave them. And it wasn't until, you know, I was mentally ready to leave, it was, and prepared to make that decision, that I do it, to make that final decision where I said, I've had enough and I'm not doing this anymore. It's so much easier for somebody to say, just leave. Fuck, if it was easy to do that, then everybody would do it on the first time. But,
Yeah, I always liken that conversation to telling a fat person they need to lose weight. Shit, I know I'm fat. Like, I don't need you to tell me that. And it's the same thing with domestic violence. It's the same thing with a lot of things. And you and I have had this conversation before that, you know, if it was just a matter of somebody saying, hey, go get some help, just leave, then to your point, everybody would do it. We wouldn't have epidemics of domestic violence. We wouldn't have hundreds and thousands of children inside of the CPS system. I mean, so many things wouldn't be as they are if it were just as simple as just go do it. And, you know, you made a good point when you said, I wasn't going to leave until I was ready. And I think that's the piece that people get hung up on, is trying to understand how in the hell are you not ready? And, you know, I remember asking myself that, like, why did I go back? What did I think? And even in my relationship that I had with the narcissist, and that was so mentally destructive. And, you know, you talk about having your self-esteem and your self-worth torn away. So you actually live in a space of self-loathing. And I don't think people get that when you reach that point, there's no vision for something else. There's no vision for any other opportunity. So the concept of leaving doesn't even sound like it's really possible for you.
Mm-hmm. And that's so, you know, going back.
Even, you know, and I've said on previous shows too, you know, one of the things that we go back for is because all times aren't bad times. And so you kind of hold on to the good times. You hope those good times will turn into more and more good times, and that the good times will last. And inevitably, that's not the case. That's not going to be the story, because abuse doesn't end on its own. Someone has to make choices. They have to choose to stop abusing, or you have to choose to extricate yourself from the relationship and the situation. It doesn't fix itself without a lot of work. I think, you know, when you talk about the kids and what happened to them, I'm trying to connect the dots between you leaving him and when you became suicidal. So that was after you had already left at that point, right? You were out of that relationship, right?
Yeah, I was out of that relationship.
Okay.
It was my my ex-husband had called me one day, and what started my journey of cutting was, and self-harm was, my ex-husband had called me one day and said, we just got the results back from how many times my daughter had been raped and molested, and the extent and the details of it. And I literally dropped the phone and went to the bathroom, and I just fell to the floor. Why he felt the need to tell me any details like that, I have no idea. but literally I
don't you think you need to know?
I'm sorry.
I was saying, do you think that you needed to know though what she'd
I
been
did.
Through?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I definitely needed to know for sure. But in the moment, you know, it was all in the moment that I had gotten that phone call and my reaction and how I was feeling in the moment. I gone to the bathroom, and again, that pain was just so deep within that I reached for the nearest thing, and I just started cutting. I just reached for some scissors and tweezers or something. I can't remember what it was, but I just started cutting and to release that pain, and tried getting, you know, I tried getting my daughter help and tried getting counseling and my other kids as well. And unless you're open to it, and receptive to it, it's, you know, it's, I don't know. You have to be ready. You have to be ready for to be able to talk to somebody and be able to be vulnerable to a counselor. And they just weren't ready for that space. They weren't ready for that space of vulnerability and to have that outlet at the time. And all I could do is, you know, once I finally left, was provide that help and safe place for my children. And it was hard. It was hard. Because my kids didn't turn to self-harm. They had turned to other things. You know, they turned to drugs and alcohol, and they turned to getting in trouble with the law and stuff like that. And that was their outlet at the time. And now they're doing amazing. My kids are doing awesome and thriving and you know, clean and sober and everything. And so that was their way of coping.
So when you were, so CPS got involved, and how did that process go when you, you said you were, your family was homeless for 3 months, until you were able to get into a shelter? Talk about that process and kind of what struggles that you faced, and like, was CPS not available? Like, I'm trying to understand, like, it seems like they came in to intervene at one point, but then when you're homeless on the streets and your kids need a roof over their head, what was that process like?
So they came in and intervened. I left the house. Me and my ex-husband owned a cab company. And so, I had left my home, one night, and I called the police because, again, I couldn't talk around my ex-husband, and have a voice around him. And so I had left and I called the police and said, there was another situation of my stepson coming into my daughter's bedroom, and I need help, and I need somebody to intervene, and he needs to be removed. And I've tried getting them to remove him out of the home, and they, for whatever reason, wouldn't. I feel like the system has failed me as well with that situation, put an alarm on the door, or have him sleep on the couch. Just have him sleep on the couch, you know. And, and so I had called the police that night, and they got CPS involved. We ended up having to go down to, I can't remember what it's called, but we went down to the CPS office, and we were interviewed, and it was a very long, lengthy process. And, when they released us, and let us go, they had met us at CPS, and the police had met us at at my home and had removed my stepson out of the house. And the following morning, because I already made that decision that we were leaving and not ever returning, he was removed and we left. We left the next morning. And so he didn't get any charges on him. He was put away into, my stepson was put away into some kind of rehab facility or something. I wasn't really involved with that. After we left, I was focused on my kids and getting the help that they needed and getting stable. But being homeless on the streets, CPS wasn't involved at that time. Because I was driving for the cab company that me and my ex-husband owned, I no longer could do that because he had removed me from all the insurance the day that I left. The next day, he removed me from everything, took me off the insurance and everything else. So I wasn't working. So I was surviving off of the income or the money that I had put away. And to be able to make sure that my kids were fed and we would take showers and not showers, we would, you know, sponge baths and stuff at QT bathrooms and whatever we had to do to survive. That's what we did for 3 months until we were able to get in to Save the Family. And there was an opening at Save the Family. It was a New Leaf shelter we were able to get into. And then from there, we were there for 3 months and then got into Save the Family for transitional housing.
Wow. So I'm going to take a quick little music break and give you a moment to breathe. And then when we come back, I want to talk about that part, specifically about the piece, because that's a big part of what keeps women in those situations is the lack of support when you do leave. So I want to talk a little bit more in detail about that when we come back. So let's go to a quick music break, and we'll be right back, guys.
No weapon formed against me shall prosper. It won't work. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. Say no weapon formed against me.
Okay, guys, I am back. We are back from break with Miss Lisa Halls. And, you know, I played the song a little bit longer than I normally do because I think maybe Miss Lisa might have needed to breathe for a second and I needed to breathe for a second. And I think that song in particular speaks to the fact about our ability to overcome through faith. And, you know, one of the things Miss Lisa said a little bit ago was reach up and reach out. And that doesn't always necessarily mean only to those in human form. Sometimes we have to reach up and reach out through our faith as well. So we are back from break. The phone lines are open, guys. The number to call in if you want to is 914-219-0880. And let me give you some resources as well. If you're feeling trapped in an abusive relationship and you're unsure where to find your local resources, you can always reach out to the National Domestic Violence 24-hour hotline. They can be accessed online at the hotline.org. That's T-H-E, hotline.org. Or you can call 1-800-799-SAFE. So that's SAFE is 7233. So 1-800-799-7233. And if you find yourself in a position where you need suicide support, you can call the Suicide Prevention Line. That number is 1-800-273-TALK, so 1-800-273-8255, or you can visit them online at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. And then also those resources, as well as for sex trafficking and some other things, are available on our website at 9seconds.org. So I wanted to make sure that we've put those resources out into the atmosphere for you. And I'll repeat them again before the end of the show. But before we went on break, that song was called No Weapon by Fred Hammond. And before we went on break, we were talking about how you found yourself in the streets with nowhere to turn. Your job was taken away from by your abuser. CPS had failed you on numerous occasions previously to protect you, to protect the kids. And I alluded to that before we went on break, how it's such a powerful testimony to why women stay. Everybody asks the question, why don't you leave? But they're not asking what makes you stay. Those are the kinds of things that make people stay. Is not having resources, not having an outlet, not having support, not having a place to go, not having a place to take care of your kids, not knowing how you're going to feed them, not knowing how you're going to support yourself. That's terrifying. And so I guess.
No, go ahead.
I guess I can't imagine. I've never been homeless. I've never been unhoused. I've never been on the street with my children. And it breaks my heart that you've had that experience. It breaks my heart that a lot of people have that experience. Will you kind of peel back that onion for people? And, you know, you mentioned the bathing in public restrooms and things like that, but what were some of the other struggles that made it so hard until you were able to get into a facility for a shelter?
I don't like people knowing that I'm struggling. That was my biggest challenge, was letting people know that I'm struggling. We stayed in a park that was right across the street from my cousin, and she didn't even know until I shared my story with her a couple years later. And she's like, had I known, you could have stayed with us. But I mean, I got so used to hiding behind the smile and faking my way through everything that, I would figure it out. I mean, my kids would figure it out. And so to reach out and put, you know, put my pride aside and ask for help, that was hard for me. It's still hard for me to reach out to people and let them know that I'm struggling or that I need help. And I had a conversation with a friend recently who I've known for years, and every time that he would ask me how I was doing, I'd tell him I'm good. And he told me that he always walked away with the thought of, how is she really good? With everything that she's dealing with and everything that she's been through, how is she good? And he said, I was waiting for that day that you would break. And I had a breaking point with him, and I just cried and lost it and said, I just can't do this. I can't fake it anymore. But it's so hard for me to reach out. Still to this day, I have people, you know, I have friends and family, you know, if you need someone to talk to or you're struggling at night, just reach out. And it's hard. It's hard to let people know that you're struggling. It's hard to let people know that you're not strong anymore and that you can't do it. And if people are given just a couple of words that they can text to somebody, you and I had a conversation recently, and I told you that I've been struggling, and you said just text 912, because if you text 911, then the police are going to be notified, but 912, we need to talk, or just a code word. I can't tell you how much that has saved me, and how much I reflect back to that. So that's why we were homeless for so long, because I put my pride aside and I didn't want people knowing that I was struggling.
I think that is a piece that, you know, you said something at the very beginning. Even beyond you not knowing quite how to put your pride aside or not wanting to let people know, you said in the beginning that, I just lost my train of thought. Oh my God, like I'm so emotional right now, like you have no idea. But you were talking about, you know, when you leave, and it's not necessarily about the pride, but you said, I was so used to hiding it. And I think we get into this dysfunctional habit of hiding behind what we think people want to hear versus speaking our truth. And that's what finding your voice is. It's about being able to speak your honest whole truth regardless. And because what I've found is, and you know, I've told you before, like I don't like to ask for help. I like to just try and figure it out. You know, I got some good friends who, like, if they can't find something in the store, they're like, hey, excuse me, where's this at? Me versus me, I'll walk around for a half hour looking for it before I will ask for help. So I totally get that. But I think that that's one of the things that with domestic violence and with, you know, suicidal thoughts and with depression, that we get so used to and so accustomed to wearing the mask and putting on the smile. Like I told you before, when, you know, because you and I met on social media, and I would have never in a million freaking trillion years imagined that your story is your story and your secrets are your secrets. Because what you see is this gorgeous smile. You're happy, you're caring, you're so affectionate, you're considerate. There's not even a trace of bitterness that I've ever seen. Even for things that, you know, people would give a pass, like, oh, yeah, I see why she's, you know, but you're not. You know, and that's testament to your character, but also to your strength. And I think, I know that you don't even recognize your own strength sometimes. But to be able to do these things and to navigate these things is strength, even if you need to ask for help. A weightlifter still has a spotter. It doesn't mean that you're not strong because you have to ask for help. And that's, you know, that's a takeaway that I hope if somebody's listening, somebody's struggling, that they remember that. Sometimes you just need a spotter. It's not about not being strong. It's not about not being capable. It's about you just need some freaking help sometimes. And, you know, I'm swallowing that pill as I'm giving out the message because, like I said, it doesn't matter what it is. I don't like to ask for help. Like, it's my car. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't like to ask for help. So I get it. I know that it's hard. And that's why, you know, I told you, like, just text me 912. Like, you don't even have to use the word help. You don't have to use I need to talk. You don't have nothing. Just, like, you're in need. So if you don't do nothing but sit on the phone and breathe, then we're just going to sit on the phone and breathe together. But you're breathing. And that's really what matters at the end of the day. So, I want to talk about the self-harm because I think there's also a lot of misunderstandings about that. You know, I've never felt suicidal. I've never felt like cutting myself would make me feel better. I've never turned to drugs. I've never turned to alcohol to solve my problems other than the occasional glass of wine or four. But beyond that, so will you talk about that? Because you said when you were describing it, you said, and I picked up the scissors because I wanted the pain to go away. And I'm trying to understand how that makes the pain go away.
It wasn't, the pain was buried so deep inside that crying wasn't enough. Crying wasn't relieving it. It didn't matter how much crying I did. It was not relieving it. And so I actually had turned to just keeping razor blades hidden, not just, but keeping razor blades hidden, and that was my source. I would go into the bathroom, and I wouldn't do it in front of my kids. I wouldn't do it out in the open. It was always behind closed doors, and but it was cutting until that pain no longer existed deep inside, and now I'm having to focus that pain on the damage that I've just done because the pain was so deep. That pain from cutting had no resemblance to the pain that I was feeling and that I wanted to release. I tried talking about it. I tried, you know, I felt like that was my only, at the time, felt like that was my only outlet. That was the only thing that I could do to release that pain, and that's what I would do. Some days were harder than others, and that's why I mentioned that I would sit in the bathtub, and I didn't even realize how, you know, I think one time between my arms and my legs, I cut at least 75 times before I finally realized the damage that I had done.
So do you not feel it?
You don't. You're so numb to it. You're so numb to the pain, like numb to that razor blade, that you don't feel it. At least I was, in my experience, I was numb to it, and I didn't feel it. The only thing that I felt was that inner pain being released through the blood that I was shedding and through the damage that I was doing to my body. And then over the years, realizing that there's other sources, there's other outlets to it, and seeking help and seeking counseling and therapy. And am I still triggered to it? Absolutely. But I can't tell you, I can't even count how many relationships and friendships I have lost. Not even intimate relationships, just friendships and relationships and people who have left my life because of self-harm. And so building up that circle of trust again, you think you can trust somebody with your darkest of secrets, and they find out and they turn their back on you. So before,
so what do they
when
say
I would
when
meet, it, they can't handle it. They can't. It's too much. They can't. They're not. They can't even. They not support me through it, but they can't even be there for me through. Don't call me. You know, it was never give me a call before you get to that point, or give me reach out when you get to that point. It was. I can't process this, and I can't deal with it, and I can't be a part of your life. I've had a lot of relationships in that way, and people walk away from me because of it. And so then you get to the point of, well, how much of my story do I reveal to this person that's entering into my life at any level? How much do I reveal? And I would just reveal bits and pieces of my story. And, you know, you hear, don't reveal everything. Don't give them the whole book at the very beginning. And I've learned that, you know what, this is my story and this is who I am. Either you're going to stick with me. If you can't handle me at my worst, you're not going to be able to handle me at my best. So here it is. And I'm giving you an option to stick around or walk away. And it's hard. It's hard, but, you know, I'm tired of giving bits and pieces and building up that trust for them to walk away after I've opened up that door. So my circle of trust is definitely, but I feel like I have a very strong, no matter how small it is, I have a very strong circle of people that I can reach out to right now. And that's why I encourage people to reach up and reach out before that backpack gets too heavy that you can't carry it around anymore. And don't wait for those rocks to become boulders. Reach out when you're having pebbles in your backpack. Reach out when you just have those small rocks in there. And get the help that you need and get the support. Find that support that you need to be able to get to, so that you don't turn to suicide being a result of, that's it. I had a conversation with my son this morning. He had come in and woke me up and wrapped his arms around me, and he was just sobbing and crying. And I said, what's going on? Is okay? And he said, I was laying in bed last night watching a TikTok video and of this mother who just couldn't do it anymore, and she drove off a runway into a lake, and she wasn't, her body wasn't found for 4 years, and that took me down a rabbit hole, and I just couldn't imagine something happening to you and us not being able to find you. With my suicidal thoughts, I have, you know, I no longer turn to cutting, but when I have those thoughts, it's what mountain can I go to? I don't have a plan, but what mountain can I go to get away? And I'll figure it out once I'm up there. And so he has said, I can't ever imagine trying to figure out what mountain you decided to go to and be done. And I'm very open with my son and the struggles that I deal with. We have a very good relationship of openness. And he's aware of what I've been dealing with and the struggles that I deal with and when I'm triggered. And I told him today, you know, you kids are what I live for. You kids are what I hang on to and why I don't give up. As hard as it is, I still have, you know, I still have my days. I'm not okay in every way, but I still strive to push through and push. You know, you and I were talking about that middle ground where it's the hardest, and we just had to keep pushing through that middle ground. And once we get through the middle, then there's hope. You know, there's hope at the end of it. But just don't give up in the middle.
Yeah. To that point, that whole conversation about it being so hard in the middle, everything we do is hard when you're in the middle of it. Every obstacle that we face, every struggle, for lack of a better term, probably a poor choice of words, every mountain that we have to climb, it's hard in the middle, but if we can get through that middle part, that, and even if it's just a day, if we can get through that day to get to the next day, and then on that day, just focus on getting through that day, pretty soon you're not in the middle anymore and you can start to see some light at the end of the tunnel. But that middle time is hard. And, you know, you and I have tried to understand, and that's part of the reason why I'm doing a few episodes really targeting the conversation surrounding suicide, because as much as I understand healing and as much as I understand and study mindset and behavior and things like that, I've never experienced a thought that said suicide was my best option. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why some people have the thought and some people don't have that thought. But, you know, you and I have talked in the past too about how people have tried to, I mean, because you're left to second guess what somebody was thinking or what somebody was feeling in absence of them leaving some sort of an explanation. But even leading up to the choice to commit suicide, that dark place, and I think that's how you often refer to it, is you know, I just go to a dark place. Can you describe that feeling? Like, is there something in that feeling that somebody would know or could say or do that can reach you when you're in that dark place? Or do you have to just find your own way out?
There's been times that I've had to find my own way out of it. I've learned to, I've really learned to not just, I mean, my circle of trust, but I, there's always one, at least one person that knows that, that I'm there, that I'm in that dark place. You know, it's, you said taking it day by day, and sometimes it's as little as breath by breath. Sometimes taking it day by day is way too much. And thinking, how am I going to make it throughout this day? How about if I just get through this next breath? Let me just stop and breathe and get through this next breath. I've incorporated meditation into my daily routine, and became a part of a community on Clubhouse. It's called Pause, Breathe, and Reflect. And you can't just meditate and breathe the first part of your day. You know, there's rooms, there's days that the room is open 3 to 5 times a day, because we have to take that moment to just breathe for 5 minutes and focus on our breath and focus on that moment and just set your backpack down. And it's finding that community. It's finding that community of support, and knowing that you're not alone, even in your darkest of times. I'll have, you know, just recently I had a very dark moment where I just said, I'm just done. And I reached out to my community the next day and on Clubhouse and said, this is what's going on and this is how I'm feeling. And I can't even tell you the amount of support that I got just to push me, just to get me through that moment of how I felt. And it was beyond that moment. It's how can we continue to support you? And people would check up on you. Or check up on me. To make sure that I was good, and they still continue to check up on me. Just pay attention to those who are struggling. If you know someone is struggling, it's when they get silent. Check on them often. Don't just check on them during Suicide Awareness Month and, you know, the video that we just watched. Don't check on them in May and in November, check on them all the time, because it's when they get silent is when, that's when I am at my darkest moment, is when I get silent. And so it's just reaching up and reaching out and knowing that I have the ability to rise up from this. And rise up again and again and again, no matter how many times I fall. I just continue to get stronger and stronger through it, to be able to have my voice to be heard, to be able to speak out about it and give others hope that there's so much more than just those thoughts that are racing through your mind and in that moment.
Yeah, well, I think that we have to make room to and give ourselves permission to let go of some things and let go of maybe some regrets, maybe some self-blame, some, you know, when you talked about the stuff that happened with your kids and how you went back. And, you know, that was one of the things with my domestic violence that I had to learn, which was to forgive myself. And because it's easy when you're, it's so easy to beat yourself up. Like, it's so easy to say, God, I was so stupid. I should have done this or I should have done that, or this is all my fault or that's all my fault. But at the end of the day, everybody's making choices. And, you know, knowing that you struggle with mental health, making sure that you have access to resources and you know, like you said, like I have a circle of people now and I have a community that I rely on that, you know, reached out to me. And, you know, for all the bad that influence that social media can have, there's also some pretty dope hidden blessings tucked away through our ability to connect globally with people. You know, it's a blessing and a curse sometimes, but I think just giving ourselves permission to take the time and, you know, your point about sometimes getting through a day is too much. That's good information to have, you know, like when you're trying to understand what somebody's going through and you want to be compassionate and you want to be supportive, I think sometimes we can inadvertently say the wrong thing and make things worse because we don't understand the battle that the person is fighting. And so if I give you the wrong weapon to take into battle with you, your likelihood of success in the battle is not as well as if I know what you're fighting and I know what tools you need. So I thank you for that. I'm going to go to a quick break, not quite as long as the last one, but I want to play a song that's a little bit more uplifting as we begin to shift the conversation. So I'm going to play this song, and then we're going to come back, and we'll talk about it a little bit, and then we will talk about kind of where you are now and some of the amazing stuff you're doing. So we'll be right back. Bridges need burning down. And I love that song. I love that song for so many reasons.
But welcome back, guys. You're listening to the V2V podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy, and I'm here with tonight's guest, Ms. Lisa Hall. She's an author, speaker, and an inspiration to many, many, many people. And we're discussing her journey and the link between domestic violence, suicide, and she's been very transparent and talked about self-harm and some other things. So we're about to shift the conversation. But again, if you are in an abusive relationship, you need to know where local resources are. The National Domestic Violence Hotline number is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 799-7233. And the website is thehotline.org. And then if you are in need of suicide support, you have suicidal thoughts, you're struggling with depression, you need somebody to talk to, you need somebody to talk to now, there's a 24-hour suicide support line. That number is 1-800-273-TALK. So it's 1-800-273-8255. And their website is suicidepreventionlifeline.org. So those are some of the national resources that are out there for you. Like I said, the song's called Some Bridges Need Burning Down. The artist's name is Keisa Brown. And I played that song specifically because one of the things you said, Lisa, was that you kept going back because it was your second marriage. You didn't want another failed marriage on your record, so to speak. And then we talk about friends that disappoint us and friends that let us down. And, you know, we keep trying to hold on and maintain relationships that are destructive or toxic, or just plain old one-sided. Sometimes they're just one-sided. And those relationships are things that need to be burned down. Like, I think we have to be okay walking away, but it's hard to walk away from, you know, so in some cases it's long-term relationships, long-term friendships. You know, we talk about strategies that you can use for that in my book, Challenge to Change, that I'm working on. But for you, once you were finally able, you know, your last straw was your last straw. You left the relationship. You've gone through everything that you've gone through. And you've been very transparent. Like I said, you still struggle. You know, it's still hard sometimes. And I played in our Voiceless to Victorious group, I shared a video. It was a young lady. She's on Instagram as Nightbird. But she sang a song on America's Got Talent called It's Okay. And she talks in the song about, you know, sometimes we lie to ourselves. I tell myself I'm all right, but maybe I lied. And she talks about how her battle with cancer. And she shares that at the end of the video, she shares that she's been given, she has it on her lungs, her liver, and somewhere else. And that she's been given a 2% chance to live. And her words were, but isn't that amazing? 2% is not 0%. So I still have a chance. I still have a shot. And she said, I'm not okay in every way, because the Simon and the judges were like, so you're not okay. And she's like, well, no, not in every way, but I'm all right. I'm okay. And if we could take that energy and bottle it up to be able to say, I'm not okay in every way, but I'm going to be all right. I'm going to, it's okay. I still got 2%. 2% is not 0%. You know, I'm in the darkness now, but darkness doesn't last forever. So I want to talk and for you to share some of the amazing stuff that you've done. I want you to talk about your books. I did not know until I read your bio that you had written 3 bestsellers. So let's talk about some of the good things that you've been able to take these negatives and turn into positives.
Absolutely. So since my story, I have written a book. It's called The Cuts Don't Hurt Anymore, From Abuse to Abundance. It was inspired by a good friend of mine from high school who had heard my story, and he told me that I needed to write a book, and I said, yeah, you're crazy. So I ran it by two people that didn't know each other, and both of their responses were, why not? And I knew that that was an answer from God. It wasn't just, I just need to write a book, you know, write my story. So since then, I have traveled from state to state sharing my story and sharing the stage with other authors. And I've got other books that I'm going to write. I don't have a title right now, but I do have other books that I am in the process of writing and just expanding my voice and allowing it to be heard on all platforms. I have other podcasts that I've been invited to be a part of their podcast as well, sharing my story. And I'm just going to keep talking. The more I talk, the more it's healing for me and reminds me to keep going as well, even in the darkness, that no matter how dark it gets for me. I'm reminded often that I'm not the only one going through this. And the more that I share my story, the more that others find their voice as well, whether it's publicly or just with me, letting them know that they're going through something very similar. And so I just keep sharing and keep shining my light that God has given me, and even in the darkness that I can be in at times.
And I think that's the thing. Sometimes, you know, I've talked about this in my story. I've talked about it on other shows. But I think sometimes we can be inward focused on what we're going through. And so I know for me, you know, when I exited my abusive relationship, and I don't know how I got out of the house that day, but I did, and I had made a promise to God while I was on that floor, and that was that I would do something special with the time that I had left. And at the time, I had no idea what it was going to be. I never had frame of reference for it. I never thought about ever writing a book. I never thought about any of the things that I do now. I certainly never thought about being able to help other women through my story. But what I found is that in telling the story and in serving other people, it's hard to shine. It's hard to focus on two things at once. So if I'm focused on service, I wasn't focused on woe is me. I wasn't focused on my uphill climb. I wasn't focused on the bruises on my face or the bruises in my soul. I was serving somebody else and realizing that a lot of people are just suffering in silence. And that's why this podcast is here, so people don't know that they don't have to do that. And people think that they're the only ones, and letting them know that they're not the only one. So when you said about, you know, writing the book, talk about that process, because I know for a lot of my author coaching clients, that's one of the biggest hurdles people have to get over, is believing that they can write the book, believing that anybody wants to hear their story. So talk about what that experience was like. Once somebody said you should write your first book, what did you do? How'd you handle that?
My first thought was, how am I going to do it? And where do I start? So I immediately started surrounding myself with other authors and reaching out to other authors on Facebook and through my circle of people. Somebody always knows somebody, and so just getting insight on that. And then people, you know, often ask me as well, well, I want to write a book, but I don't know where to start. You just start. You don't worry about the, you know, you don't worry about grammar. You don't worry about where everything is going to go in your story. You just write. And I, every night I would set a time from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. and I would just write. And I always made sure that as long as God was pouring into me, I was writing. It didn't matter how many late hours I was up, but I was writing until this book was finished, because I knew that other people were could relate to my story, and that, you know, if who's going to break the silence if I don't speak up? So I had to be that voice for others who are afraid to speak up. And my biggest takeaway from writing my book was making sure that I had people on board during the process. Having to relive all of that all over again, that was hard. And I had many nights of pushing through and not knowing if I was going to be able to get through that next chapter and get through that next part of my life. And just having that support, you know, you've got this, and, you know, just pushing me on and supporting me through it. But literally just writing. Just write your story. So many people need to hear it, and there's always going to be somebody out there that can relate to your story. One of my mentors had said to me one time, he said, why are you procrastinating with writing your book? And I said, because I don't know what to write next, and I don't know why I'm procrastinating. I just am. And one thing that he said to me was, his life could be saved if your story was heard. That's all I needed. And I continued writing, and that's how I finished my book. So anytime that I would write and get through those challenging times, was whose life is going to be saved by telling this part of my story. And so that's why I'm so open now about sharing my story. And you know, I don't mask it anymore as far as when I tell it. It's raw and it's real, because somebody can relate to it. And I'm hoping that somebody's life, even if it's just one person's life that I touch and can save, you're sharing my story, then my mission has been fulfilled.
Yeah, and that's so true about the, you know, when you, especially when you're telling your story and you're kind of writing, you know, it's all out there. Stuff people don't know, stuff you tried to deny. And so in that writing process, you're absolutely right. When I wrote my first book, Journey to Find Your Butterfly Potential, my mentor told me before I started, he said, now, when you write this type of a book, you're going to hit a wall, is what he called it. And he said, so I need you to be prepared for what that looks like. And I remember telling him, I'm good. I'm healed. I'm straight. Like, I'm completely comfortable telling my story. Until you got to write it. And until you get in your own head about somebody's going to read it. Somebody's going to, like, if you're telling your story, like if I'm public speaking, it didn't bother me to tell my story because I could look in the audience and see who was there. I could look in the audience and if I needed to modify something or if I needed to leave out a little tiny detail, or, you know, I could control what was told based on who I'm speaking to. So I'm writing the narrative to send the message that I want to send. But when you're writing your story in a book, you lose all control over who has access to it. Because once it's out there, it's out there. And you're right.
Yes.
Like, you have to have something, like for you, it was him saying, who's going to be saved? You have to have something that gets you through that wall and make you keep writing, and then gives you the courage to push send when you have to send the manuscript to your editor or to your publisher.
Yeah, that wall is challenging.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's a challenge for a lot of people. And so so you mentioned a group. I know that you're heavily involved in a group on Clubhouse. And talk about that a little bit. And, you know, because that may be something, I know it's been a tremendous resource for you and a good source of support. So share the information about that, if you would, kind of with the listeners as well.
Absolutely. Been a huge circle of support. We no longer call, I call them my family. They have just really embraced me and loved me with open arms. It's Michael O'Brien is who runs the room, and it's called Pause, Breathe, and Reflect. And so he does it at 7, the first one's at 7:35 in the morning Eastern time. And then he'll schedule the rooms throughout the day. So some days he does 3 rooms, some days he does 5 rooms throughout the day. But he just allows you to be, come as you are, and just be. We laugh in there, we cry in there, we you know, if you feel like sharing what's going on, you know, a happy moment or a moment that you're struggling in, then he allows you to do that. Otherwise, if you just want to be and just sit there and listen, then you can do that as well. He always tells us, you do you, boo. And so whatever you're comfortable with doing, then that's what he wants you to do. It's a community that I have relied on huge and really make sure that I am engaged as far as being a part of it every single day. Even if I can't make every single room, then, you know, I'm at least in there once a day, if not more, but it's changed my life. The community in there has changed my life and the people in that room. So if you are looking for a place to slow down and breathe and a place of community, I definitely encourage you to check us out or check him out and come be a part of the family. You know, a lot of people call in Clubhouse call it a stage. Come up to the stage and you can talk. And he calls it the kitchen because the best conversations happen in the kitchen. Or you can stay down in the living room where you're comfortable. And you want to just come up to the kitchen and be a part of us and just be. And you can do that as well. But we welcome everybody with open arms and support and love on you and meet you where you're at.
No, I think that's great. And I've even stopped in a couple of times and kind of listened. And I catch it after the exercises are done, but there is an amazing, it seems to have an amazing amount of support and encouragement for one another. And then we also have our Facebook group, Voiceless to Victorious, which we are building out. In the same vein, just to really give people a place to kind of gather and be transparent, be encouraging to one another. And you're in that group as well, so people can connect with you there. What's your social media handles so that if they want to reach out to you directly that they can do that?
So on Facebook, it's just my first and last name under Lisa Halls. And on Instagram, it's My Voice Is Real. And you can reach me by email at myvoicesreal@gmail.com as well.
Okay. All right, and I'm going to play this song because this is you now.
You know the bed feels warmer. Down. Think that I'll come running back. Baby, you don't know me 'cause you're dead wrong.
So that is Miss Kelly Clarkson with her song Stronger, and that's what I think about you now, my dear. You are so much stronger than you once were, and you are also stronger than you even know that you are. You're an inspiration to so, so many people. For everybody listening, that is our show tonight. I thank you, Miss Lisa. You know, I always say survival is a responsibility, so I'm grateful to have been able to serve alongside you tonight in hopes of saving somebody else's life and, you know, sharing some information and empowering some people to maybe have some courageous conversations about what they're going through. And once again, guys, if you're in a domestic violence relationship, an abusive relationship, the hotline.org is the 24-hour domestic violence hotline. The phone number is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. And if you need suicide support, somebody to talk to 24 hours a day, you can call 1-800-273-8255 or visit them online at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. And again, those links are on our website at 9seconds.org. And if you want to connect with Miss Lisa, you can join our Voiceless to Victorious Facebook group. There'll be links on my social media. There'll be links on the website for you to be able to do that. And if you have a story that you want to share, some knowledge that you want to drop, or if you just have some show ideas, you can go to 9seconds.org/V2V, and there's a form on there that you can complete. And in the meantime and in between times, this is Dr. Marcy, the voice for the voiceless, and tonight's guest, Miss Lisa Halls, wishing you all health, safety, and success until we link up again next week. Miss Lisa, I appreciate you and thank you.
Thank you again for this opportunity. And thank you everybody else too, who joined in and supported us through this movement as well.
All right, guys, and on that note, we are going to get out of here with our own theme song. I feel like everybody should have a theme song. So we are going to head on out for this week, and we will be back here next week again at 7:30 to chat once again on Voiceless to Victorious.
Around and around, got my feet.